WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is Meredith Monk. She's been at the forefront of the experimental performance scene for many years. She's currently preparing to perform with her vocal ensemble at the Next Wave Festival in New York. She's also working on an opera for the Houston Grand Opera. Meredith Monk is a composer, choreographer, dancer, theater director, and singer. As a composer and singer, she's invented a vocabulary of sounds which have no literal meaning, but evoke a range of emotions. On her new album, her seventh, Do You Be, she sings compositions from the last 16 years. Na 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 oh oh na 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 oh oh ma 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 oh oh na 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 oh oh na
thing that's wonderful about the voice is that it deals with emotions that we don't have words for. It actually gets between the cracks of emotions that we talk about.
Were you trained to sing conventionally?
I did study at Sarah Lawrence. I studied a voice, vocal chamber music and lieder and regular classical singing.
Mm-hmm. Now, why didn't you stick with that?
Well, I think I really don't have the temperament to do that. I was always interested in making things, and even when I was at school, I was already starting to work on pieces of my own. I think that my temperament is more that I'm interested in finding things, and I don't think I would have been content to be an interpreter. I do think that being an interpreter is a real life work, though. I mean, I'm saying for some people, I think that that's really certainly enough and very honorable, and there's a lot to do.
One of the earliest pieces on your new album, Do You Be, I want to talk about that for a minute. It's almost to me as if you had found a way to make crying into music.
I always actually think of that piece as flying rather than crying. It's very, because the form is quite simple. It really is a kind of a rise. It goes up to its height and then it comes down. It always feels like it's very much in space. And it's one of my favorite songs to perform, as a matter of fact.
I think of your music as expressing musically things like sighs and moans and laughs and crying, just really emotionally deep things, but without words.
Mm-hmm. Well, all those gestures, those are really human vocal gestures, are part of a vocabulary of the voice. And another thing that I've loved working with the voice over the years is seeing that when you work with your own instrument, you come upon what I would call archetypal songs or vocal sounds that exist in a lot of different cultures. And that's one level, which is that voices have a lot in common all over the world. For example, if I came upon something like a glottal break when I'm working myself with my own voice, that exists in a lot of different cultures. It exists in African music. It exists in yodeling. It exists in North Carolina hollering. It exists in Balkan music. So that's something that's a thing that's in each person's voice, but has a kind of world manifestation. And that's one level. And then the other thing that's wonderful is that each person's voice is completely different. So people really develop their own vocabularies, and there's certain vocal cords that do certain things, and there's certain vocal cords that don't do certain things. And that's the thing that gives each person their unique vocal qualities.
Do you think that you use male and female voices differently?
Well, I think that I know more about the female voice. For example, with The Ringing Place, the piece that I'm working on now, I'm working a lot with resonance and quite high. So I'm working with a lot of dealing with head resonance, way up in the top of the head resonance. And I'm trying to find what that is in a man's voice, which is quite different. For the men, it's falsetto, but the resonance is very different. And I'm trying to find what a comparable thing for a man's voice would be. Or is it just that what I'm interested in is these upper partials and, you know, this kind of high sound. So right now that's what we're working with, because I'm working with the same number of men as with women.
There were singers in your family, right?
Mm-hmm. My mother was a singer. She was the original Muriel Scar on the radio. And she sang things like Blue Bonnet Margarine commercials and Royal Pudding, I remember. I actually grew up in a control room. And my grandfather, her father, was a singer and had a music conservatory in New York. And her mother was a concert pianist. So I do come from a musical family.
So singing was no big deal in your family. It was just what people do.
Yeah, it seems pretty. It was pretty natural to me. I sang a lot as a child, and I started with piano music, piano lessons when I was young, and I read music at a very young age. I have when I was a child, they didn't have tape. They didn't have tape at that time, but they had those little records that you could make at home. So I have one or two of those, and there's one of my grandfather, who was in his 80s, my mother, and me. I must have been maybe about 8 years old, singing Silent Night in harmony. So it's like three generations of singers singing Silent Night together, and it's really, really great to hear.
That sounds wonderful. Your music is so emotional, and there have been times in the world of the avant-garde and new music when people tended to have more of a posture of irony and distance than emotional directness. Mm-hmm. Was there ever a time when it was difficult for you to be accepted because of the emotional depth of your music?
Yeah, I think the 60s was a pretty hard period on that level, because minimalism was a very strong impulse in all the arts, I mean, in painting and in music and theater. And I think they saw that way of dealing with emotion as romantic, but I actually don't feel that that's what it's coming from. I think it's a very direct, straightforward kind of way of dealing with human experience. I think that in the way that I work is that if I start with something, I try to let that tell me what to do with it. I mean, it's really like I work on material, and I try to see what that material wants in terms of a form. And that could go anywhere from depth of you know, I don't like to say tragedy, but, you know, sadness, to something like comedy.
When you're singing, do you just totally lose yourself in the music?
That's a hard thing to answer. What is going on in my mind during the time I was singing, right? That's actually the question.
Yeah, and if you're feeling the emotion that you're conveying, or if you're really caught up in the technique of it as well.
Well, I think all of the above. I think that it's hard to describe it. It's not really that, strangely enough, it's not that I'm feeling the exact emotion that I'm conveying, because then in a way, if I was doing that, it wouldn't really leave any room for the audience. So it's sort of, I'm not really aware of myself thinking. That's one of the things that's wonderful about performing, is that you don't, your thought process, that kind of discursive mind, during the best performances, the discursive mind is not working. You really are where you are. You are exactly where you are, and it has a kind of pinpointed consciousness, and also in the best performances, it also has a feeling of openness. So there's the pinpoint and the openness simultaneously.
Meredith, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your music.
Thanks so much, Terry.
Composer and singer Meredith Monk, her new album is called Do You Be.